that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So Donald Trump and the GOP have been crowing about how great the economy has been, how great it's doing, and yet the majority of Americans are working longer, they're working harder, and they're working for less. Sorry, all of that, $4,000 promise, not in the paychecks. And the question in this election should be, who is government working for? Who should the policies benefit? What good is a good economy if many of we, the people, are not enjoying the fruits of our labor? And to me, that's one of those central questions for every candidate. And yet, all I get out of Republicans is, well, tax cuts are the panacea. Deregulation, panacea. Business friendly. And we've been doing this repeatedly for 40 years now. We've been cutting, slashing taxes. We've been gutting, deregulating everything. And yet, it's never enough, and it never seems to trickle down. Never seems to get down to we, the working people. So when I saw my next guest, I'll give an answer to a wage question that was extremely thoughtful, was accurate, and asked the question, what good's an economy if it doesn't work for us? That's why I've asked Brett Pansky to come back and talk with us, share some of his thoughts on what the economy's for, and make that pitch of final days of the campaign, as he is running for state representative in the 77th district there in my former home state of Ohio. Brett, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So, I saw your answer, and I hope people will take a look at it. I'm basically answering the question of, what good's an economy if we're not benefiting from it?
Yeah, the question I got, and I've gotten it from several people, is, what's the most pressing economic need, not only for the state of Ohio, but in my district? And my answer has been pretty consistent throughout, and it's been wages. In fact, I got an opportunity in a candidate forum not long ago to kind of ask a question back. And that question that I asked the audience that really seemed to stick with them was, what is an economy for? And when you think about it, it's a pretty simple question. And it's kind of the basis of why we do these things that we do, but I'm not sure we ever look at it through that particular lens. So the idea of what is an economy for? And if it's not for you and me and our friends and neighbors, and if it's not lifting all boats, well, then it's not really, then why do we bother, pretty much? So, and that was an answer to the question. Of course, you might guess that was a pretty stark contrast to my opponent's answer, who literally tried to cram the word tax cuts in as many times as humanly possible in 90 seconds. And that was pretty much his entire answer. And it's kind of been like that. It's kind of been like that through the entire campaign. We've had several different, debates and candidate forums and things like that. And everything I'm getting from the right has been, kind of your typical 10-word answer. When you get to word 11, there's just nothing left.
Right.
Once you get past, cutting red tape and cutting taxes, there's really nothing there, which really explains a lot of the problems that we have in my district. It's one of the key reasons why I'm running.
No, I mean, look, they're one-trick ponies. I mean, and look, it was never supposed to trickle down to us anyway. It was all a ruse. It was all a con. And we fell for it. And the question is how much longer are we going to continue to fall for this idea that continuing to cut taxes for the very wealthy and big corporations is somehow going to benefit the people who work for a living? I mean, look at this last tax hoax that they perpetrated on us. They told us we're going to bring back all of that money that corporate America has been hoarding offshore, and it's going to unleash the power of investment. Yet, the last report that I saw, no investment. Lots of stock buybacks, lots of CEOs cashing in, lots of investors putting money in their pocket, but working people, not so much.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, while I've said a number of times, I'm as happy as the next guy that the Dow's hitting a high number. The first thing we have to understand is I think it's 47% of us have any money at all in the market. So the first thing you do when you make the economy strictly about cranking up that Dow number, and that's the only thing that you see as a win, you're immediately at the outset leaving behind over half of us. So it's just not, and while it's a great thing, that's wonderful. That number is high. You know, first of all, we can't leave those people behind, you know, and second, even though, you know, there are some good things that come along when those things are at high numbers, it just doesn't do what we think it's going to do, you know, right. And it certainly doesn't bring up wages. I mean, basically the tax plan, or what lots of people call the tax scam, and it's hard to disagree with that. It didn't tie anything to that money. We basically just backed up a truckload of money to the top, to people who are already wealthy and don't need it, with no strings attached. I mean, that would have been a hell of a time to ask for a raise, you know, but we didn't do that. So I've done something kind of unconventional when talking about taxes and regulation here in my district. I've said I'm a fan of tax cuts. If you're a business and you want to find a way to raise wages for your employees, come to me. I'll do everything I can. I'll do everything I can to help you match that money that you lose by raising the wages of your employees. If I can find a tax cut that'll help you offset that cost, come on in. Let's talk about it. But this whole tax giveaway with no strings, I mean, this is ridiculous. It's just got to stop.
No, I've often said, you know, one of the best times in the country's history was back when the tax rate was extremely high. I go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, who had a top marginal tax rate of 92%. And I know a lot of people are going, 92%. Nobody paid that because we had tons of loopholes, tons of opportunities for people to take that money and use it how they saw fit, through higher wages, through benefits for their workers, through investing in building hospitals and schools and public parks and, you know, whatever, slapping their names on stuff, but investing it in our society, not just hoarding it, and certainly not taking it overseas to build infrastructure and manufacturing capacity somewhere else at our expense. So I'm in favor of a high tax rate with lots of loopholes, lots of ways for people to invest in building schools and hospitals and all kinds of stuff to make sure that we, the people, get what we need. And if you're not going to do it, we're going to take the money and build it ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, when you think back to those times, we pretty much built most of the infrastructure that we still currently use.
Right.
You know, most of it was built during that time. And without that investment, none of it would have been built. And most of it now, we've just been patching together, you know, for the last several decades, because we can't find the money to invest, to rebuild, or much less expand on any of that stuff. So bridges are falling apart and these things are becoming stories. And all of this is predictable. And all of it, you know, has its roots in policy as well. What we choose to support, what we choose not to support, and to what degree we choose to support it has been a driving force in a lot of this. But yeah, a lot of our infrastructure is older than my grandparents.
No, I mean, you go back through the WPA all the way through the Eisenhower investments, building the highway system, all through that era. That's when we became the country we are now. And you're right. We're now just hanging on to that investment. And yet, you know, it's one of those things that used to be a nonpartisan issue. You know, I've got a friend who, you know, was a former congressman out from your area, Bob Ney, who used to say, look, you know, infrastructure votes were yawn votes. You know, both Democrats wanted it because it meant jobs. Republicans wanted it because it meant jobs. It meant filling the potholes. We're not filling the potholes anymore.
That's actually a pretty interesting issue in my district in particular. We have a serious roads problem. Again, my district, you know, borders the city of Columbus. So, but you still there's a lot of folks in my district who have to drive, you know, about an hour or so to get to work, because a lot of the smaller towns in my district are just not able to bring jobs in. So, one of the things that is not happening in my district is we're not taking care of the roads. So, you know, driving to Columbus to go to your job is a minefield, you know. And I always thought if you're gonna punt on job creation, as we clearly have. And you're also going to have bad roads. I mean, why would you let those two things be this terrible at the same time? If I'm not able to bring jobs into my district, if I'm not able to bring jobs in my community, the very least I can do is make sure that my constituents who have to drive out of the district glide to and from work.
Right.
You know, the fact that we've punted on both of these things at the same time is just a ridiculous waste.
And maybe also a little public transportation.
Yeah, never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing. But again, these are investments in in our communities. There are investments that just don't seem to be happening because, you know, we seem to have this belief that the private sector is going to do all this stuff. And, you know, I know Trump, you know, when he came into office, he was talking about public-private partnerships and this was the panacea. We're going to use all this Wall Street money to rebuild our roads and bridges. Yet here we are almost 2 years into the gig and not seeing it.
Right. And actually, it reaches a lot farther than that, too, when you consider that we're not only looking at our infrastructure and roads and bridges and buildings and things like that. Let's have a look at our schools. You know, here in Ohio, our public school ranking at the end of the Strickland administration about 7 years ago was fifth in the nation. We were considered to have a very good public school system. Now, the most generous rating that we get is 22nd, and I've seen us as low as 40th. Now, and on top of that, it extends to the college level as well. I'll tell you a quick story about a friend of mine who's a teacher in the district. He was actually a former student of mine. He comes into the classroom and, you know, he works a full shift during the day, comes into my classroom at night, studies hard, you know, does a great job and repeats that in all of his other classes, ends up getting his degree. He gets a teaching degree. Now, this guy is now a middle school history teacher in the district. Okay. He works about 50-hour weeks. He makes $42,000 a year. All right. He's $110,000 in debt. And he gives about $1,000 a year back to his classroom in, you know, in school supplies that he buys himself. And this is the nature of teaching now, you know, for many people in the district. And so here we have a guy who comes into my classroom, you know, works a full shift, comes in my classroom at night. Outperforms everyone, does a great job. He's a top student, gonna be great. And on top of that, he goes into the profession where we want our best and brightest to go. He gives back. He becomes a servant. Right? He goes into the system to teach other people, to, you know, become a service to the community. And this is how we treat him. You know, collectively as a society, this is how we treat him. He makes $42,000 a year for working, you know, 50 hours a week, and he's got $100,000 in student loan debt because we've just stopped supporting our schools, you know, and it's something that investment in our infrastructure, that investment in each other, as a good for society as a whole, we have to find that will again, you know, because these folks who come along and just say, well, I'm going to cut your taxes, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and that being a winning message, it may win in the short term, but in the long term, it's a big loser.
Yeah, you know, because we've talked about this before on the program where, you know, look, the tax cut that I may have gotten that I haven't seen because I haven't seen one, how much money did I put out in having my front end of my car realigned because, you know, the potholes were killing it. Right. You know, you go down the list of, you know, my local taxes are being raised because, you know, there's a trickle-down effect. Eventually, you need to fund, just keeping the lights on at the local municipal building or the state or whatever. There's this view that we can get something for nothing, though, Brett. And it's bizarre to me that, you know, the right wingers are the ones who are telling us, you know, the free market, and, you know, got to pay for things. And yet they seem to love giving stuff away, especially to rich people.
Yeah. And well, the thing is, you know, most of the people that I'm competing with, you know, especially the folks on the right, they'll never tell you that they raised your taxes. Right? They do it all the time. They just don't tell you about it. So I'll give you an example. Right now, I early voted today. I went to the polls today and cast my vote.
Did you vote for yourself?
On the ballot. I'm sorry?
Did you vote for yourself?
Of course I did.
Okay.
So I go to the polls, and on the ballot are a number of measures outside of, you know, the different candidates. There's a number of measures on the ballot. One of them is for the local Adam board. These are folks who help out with mental health issues and drug addiction, handle these kinds of things. They used to be, you know, get a pretty significant amount of money from the state. That went away, so they had to come directly to the people, all right, with a ballot issue. That's a tax increase, all right? It's just not one that the Republicans come along and claim ownership of. Meals on Wheels was on the ballot. They used to get a significant, amount of money from the state. Now they have to come directly to the people. The library had to come directly to the people. This is what happens when tax cuts, you know, forces to cut programs that we do, you know, respect and want to keep. So in order to preserve this message of we're going to cut taxes and we're going to cut red tape, what they're doing is they're leaving programs out that do a lot of good. You know, they're leaving programs out that, you know, that are a huge benefit to the community, forcing those programs to go directly to the people to sustain themselves. And who knows if those programs are still going to exist. I mean, if Meals on Wheels no longer becomes a thing in my district, that's going to be a real problem for a lot of people who really need that help. And I guarantee you, this is the kind of thing that we as a society, you know, would probably support.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we've got that mantra that no taxes, no new taxes. I can't ever allow a new tax. We might actually cut Meals on Wheels. That's a real possibility in my district. And it's a crime if it happens, you know, if it does happen, it's going to happen more because of the current rhetoric of the time than it is because of any, you know, real kind of nuts and bolts logical decision making that's going on.
I mean, it's crazy. And we've gone through the same thing here in Pennsylvania as well. When Tom Corbett was governor, it was the exact same kind of insanity. Let me change gears a second. I got another minute or two left. You know, we're ticking down to the final days of the election. I mean, you've got to be looking to Tuesday with some kind of relief going, you know, it's been fun, but I can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah, it's really an odd feeling. And I don't know that I can quite explain it to anyone who's never done it before. And by the way, I encourage everyone to do it. If you've never run for office before, go to the Board of Elections, find a race you might be interested, pull petitions, get involved, because it is an incredible experience. The people I've met, the stories I've heard, I'm so much more aware of my community than I ever was before. And I was pretty plugged in before. But you're right. There's a finish line out there, and I'm eyeballing it. I really am. But it's one of those things that I don't want to fall over the tape. I want to run through it. So we're giving it everything we've got. We've got every minute of every day planned out in these last few days of the campaign, and we're gonna run through the tape, and we're gonna make a good argument, and then we're gonna leave it to the voters and see what happens.
Well, Brett, I wish you nothing but the best. You're one of the good guys out there. I hope the good people of your district have the wisdom and the vision to put you into that 77th district seat, because I think you do a fantastic job. And when this is over, I'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts with us.
Happy to. Thanks.
Good stuff. Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it. Make sure you check out his website, brettpransky.com. Follow him on Twitter, @BrettPransky. Look, you know, just days away. Like I said, wishing the best for him. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. When the kids are united, they can never be.